Last line of Ham and Bays. This is going to be halachic, so put on your halacha cap, because it's not going to be guided like it was before. We're going to have to do a little bit of remembering the different shitas, lining them up, and remembering them. Eze ukat. So we reference the Mishnah. Very last line of Ham and Bays. Eze ukatan. What is a katan that is exempt from Re'iyah, from going up to the Harabayit? Kol shenei yachol lirkov al ketefo shel aviv, right? So it's a machloket, beitel beit shama, right? Just recall which one said what. Beit shama said, if he's so young that he can't hold his body up, even if the father is carrying him on his shoulders, right? That's a very young age. By the time a kid's, you know, three years old, 4 years old, he can hold himself upright, even if he can't walk so well. And Beit Shammai says no. Beit Hillel says no. It's an older age. The only time they're obligated, at least on the rabbinic level of going with their parent, their father, is when they can walk. Even if they have to hold their father's hand, but they have to be able to walk. That's an older age, because it's hilly. You got to go up the Temple Mount. It may not be so easy. You got to exert. Certainly not for a very little kid. Okay, so that's the machlokas. Again, Beit Shammai says. A younger age, right? Remember, I always think about we mentioned this once before. Beit Shammai removed the ceiling over his newborn grandson's bed, bassinet on Sukkos, and laid tzchach on top of it, so that his tiny baby, like days old, weeks old, could fulfill the mitzvah of Sukkah, right? So it seems that Beit Shammai would trend young when it came to teaching kids mitzvah, and that stays consistent here. His age is younger than Beit Hillel's, right? That's important for us to remember. Matkivla Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Zeira asks, right? Ad hacha man atye. Right? So as Rashi says, Ad Yerushalayim yehaviyu. Right? We're talking about the mitzvah of Re'iyah, that the child is going up to the Temple Mount, right? And we're wondering, and the question is, you know, you're asking at what age they can make it there, but the truth is they've already traveled. They may have traveled. Most people didn't live in Jerusalem, and yet families would be Ola Regel, right? And we'll see in a moment why they had to be Ola Regel. So these children had made most of the trek, and now we're worried about that last bit from the Jerusalem city, right? From the Kotel Plaza up to the top of the to the Temple Mount. Why are you worried about that? They made it all the way here already. They traveled so far. So Amrle Abaye, right? So then So Amrle Abaye. So Abaye said Ad Hacha Demichayva Ime. Besimcha itaite ime. Mikan ve'elach yimnachal ala lechos b'yado shalavim yushalayim laharabayit chayav ilo pater. Right, so Abaye says, no, the reason why it makes sense at all that Beit Hillel says like he has to be able to walk by himself. But how did he get from Tveria to Jerusalem? Somehow he got there the same way he got from Tveria to Jerusalem. Let him get from the city to the Harabayit. So Abaye says, no, you got it wrong. His mother was with him the rest of the way, right? His mother was. His mother carried him. His mother cajoled him. Whatever it was, his mother ensured that he was able to travel. Why? Because there's an obligation of simcha on the regel. The samachta bechagecha, ato veitcha, your entire home, right? So they would all go together to Yerushalayim, right? Im the al simcha nitzavu nashim. Right, so women are also obligated in Simchat Yom Tov, and men are obligated to ensure that their wives are happy on Yom Tov. So they should be together. Yeah, what's the question?
It's not like the mother can take him in a different way than the father can take him. I mean, somebody took him.
Right,
but the mother carried him. Right. The father could carry him.
Right, but I guess the question is, first of all, it could be that the father wouldn't carry him. Right, like that's not what That's not what that's not what happened back then.
It's not 2019.
It's not 2019, right? It's not so progressive. There were very rigid gender roles. Uh-huh. And that being the case, right, the only obligation for the father to start educating his child is at the point in time in which the father was dealing with the child. And the question was, but the father had to deal with the child to get him to Jerusalem. No, the mother dealt with him. And there's no and remember, the last point being, there's an obligation of the woman to go to Yerushalayim, to be with her family for Yom Tov. Simcha, there is. Re'iyah, there is not. We saw before, the Mishnah tells us, women are exempt. So if women were obligated, then the woman could continue to take her child the rest of the way. Okay, so that's the assumption we have from Abaye. But that we have a question on a pasuk.
What about a kid riding on a donkey or something? You don't go that way.
You don't take work animals up to the Makom HaMikdash.
So there's another reason why up until now it's...
Yeah, right. I mean, again, the Gemara says that however the travel went, it was supervised by the mother. And from Jerusalem to the Temple Mount, the mother's out of the picture. And therefore, only when the child's independent enough to spend time with the father alone, when the mother trusts the father to be with the child alone, then... let's be real about it. Then the father's obligated to take him to the Makom HaMikdash.
The father's 30 feet behind, carrying all the luggage.
Right. That was the rest of the way from Tveria to Jerusalem. The father was behind, and then she says, "Drop it here." And now you got to go. Now take the kid the rest of the way.
Right, I'll check into the hotel.
Exactly. Very, very, very rigid gender roles. Exactly. But the more things change. Anyway, Vilo Bader. So, Heshiv Rebbe Tachat Beit Hillel. So, Rebbe asks about this understanding, right? Abaye just explained how we understand Beit Hillel, that the reason why it's an older age is because only when the child is independent of the mother, basically, does the father have to take him up to the Temple Mount. But they've traveled up until now, the whole family together. So Rebbe has a question on that. L'divrei Heshiv Rebbe Tachat Beit Hillel L'divrei Beit Shammai. Why? Because V'chana lo alta ki amra le'isha ad yigamah hanar ve'vetiv. Right? Because there's a pasuk in Shmuel Aleph, right? The whole story of Shmuel. That Chana says, I'm not going Ola Regal, and that in those days it was to Shiloh. That's where the Mishkan was. I'm not going to Shiloh until the child has been weaned, and then I'll bring him, right? So it's an older age. Shmuel at that, right? A child may not yet be weaned. We assumed a child gets weaned at 3 back in those days. So, but a child already of 2, let's say, can sit on his father's shoulders and go to Shiloh. So that pasuk seems to contradict the position of Beit Shammai, who had that very young age, where the obligation of the father to take the child up to the Temple Mount or to the Mishkan takes effect. So how do we understand that pasuk? So Avua answered, "L'tamech, according to your reasoning, right? According to your question, tikshilach chana gufa milo mechayva b'simcha." Right. So there's a more fundamental question. You're worried about the fact that the child didn't go when, even though he was old enough to ride on the shoulders of his father. But there's a more fundamental question. Chana should have been obligated to go to Shiloh, right, as a fulfillment of his somachta b'chagecha. Ela chana. No, there's a special... You can't learn anything general out of that pasuk because Chana saw that Shmuel was particularly delicate, or Chana, because of her great love, was an overprotective mother. And she was worried, she was worried that Shmuel would be adversely affected, taken ill as a result of the journey. And therefore she said, I'm not doing it. Right? So there's no general rule we can learn about a typical child from the case of Chana, because Chana or Shmuel were unique. By Rav Shimon. Rav Shimon asks, Katan Chiger L'divrei Beit Shammai. Right? Remember, Beit Shammai says that the child can ride on the father's shoulders to go up to the Temple Mount. What if the child's lame? Couldn't walk on his own. Right? Again, for Beit Shammai, he doesn't have to walk. But an adult who's lame wouldn't have to go. So that's the question according to Beit Shammai. V'suma l'divrei shneihem ahu. And a blind child. Does the father have to bring a blind child, both according to Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel? Because according to Beit Hillel, you have to walk, right? But according to Beit Hillel, if the child's blind, if that status in adulthood would exempt the individual from going to the Temple Mount, what about as a child? So heichi dami. So we have to clarify. What case are we asking about? If we're talking about a chronic, permanent disability, right? The child's lame now. The child's blind now. There's no foreseeable recovery. So then, then of course the logic would dictate that this status as an adult, the child will be exempt. There's no reason to assume that the child's going to recover. So whatever the status as the adult, that's going to be the status as the child. So if the child is lame or blind now, and there's no thought of recovery, then he should be exempt, just like he will be when he is an adult. Why teach him in the mitzvah if the mitzvah is never going to be applied to him? Lo tricha, no, so we're talking about chigesh she'achalit pashet, v'suma she'achalit pateach, we're talking about childhood malaise, childhood illnesses, where there's a degree of optimism that the child will grow out of it, right? So what's the case there? Now he's blind. We have reason to believe that by the time he's an adult, he will be seeing. Now he's lame. We have reason to believe that he'll grow out of this childhood illness and he will be able to walk. What about now? Does the father have to take him to the Makom HaMikdash? My so Amar Baye, Kol Hecha de Godol, Michayev Midiyoraita, Katanami, Mechan Chinon Le Midrabanon. Right? So Abaye says no. Abaye says, while the child is disabled, right? So we look at the child, Bashir Husham, right? What is he now? And if his status now as an adult, he'd be obligated to go. So we are obligated to train that child on a rabbinic level to go. But if today he's lame, today he's blind, we hope he recovers. When he recovers, he will then be obligated, if he recovers before adulthood, then his father will be obligated on a rabbinic level to teach him. If he recovers after adulthood, then when he recovers, he will be obligated on a Torah level. Until that time, right? Until that time, Kolecha Degadol Pater V'Derayta Midrabanan Kata Nami Pater. Right? So if he's exempt now, if he were an adult, so he's exempt, the father's also exempt from chinuch of that child. Right? You could have made a different argument. You could have said, since we're pretty sure he's going to be able to see, and chinuch is all about the future, then maybe we should obligate the father to teach him because we assume that he'll ultimately be obligated. But no, that's not the logic that Abaye presents. Beit Shammai Omrim, Hariya Shtei Kesef. Right, so there's a machloket, also Beit Hillel Beit Shammai, about what is worth more, the Ola or the Shlamim. Right, according to Beit Shammai, the Ola of Re'iya is worth 2 silver maz, and the Shalmei Chagiga, right? There's the Ola of Re'iya and the Shalmei Chagiga, right? The difference between Ola and Shlamim, Ola is completely brought up, burnt up to God. Shlamim is a peace offering, some say because everyone gets a peace, right? Two different, right? Right? The Kohen gets a piece, the God gets a piece on the Mizbeach, the people get a piece, it's like a big kiddush, you had a lot of food, you gotta get rid of it, right? So you only had a day and a half, so you would invite your friends over, so that's Shlamim. I once had a teacher who said that was always the problem with the Middle East peace process, that the Israelis and the Arabs spelled it differently, right? So which one's worth more? Beit Shammai says that the Ola is worth 2 silver ma. Beit Hillel says, no, that's only worth 1. And the Shalmei Chagiga, the Chagiga peace offerings, are worth 2. So we're going to have to keep that straight in our heads because we're going to go in depth in this right now. Tarabanan, Tanarabanan. Beit Shammai Omrim Hariya Shtei Kasef, Achagiga Ma Kasef. Right, so Beit Shammai says that the Ola is worth more. Sharia Ola kula legavoa mashenge bechagiga. Right. So number one is it all goes to God. Right. Give God his props. It should be worth more than what we eat. No, let God have the nicer thing. V'od matzinu batzeret We also find by Shavuos, right? Shavuos is called Atzeret. By the Chazal, Shariba Bahen Hakatu Ba'olot Yoter Mi B'Shlamim. The offering on Atzeret, the Shtei Halechem, right? We're told that on, I'm just paraphrasing Rashi, that upon the two loaves of wheat bread that are finally offered after the Omer is counted from the time you offer the barley harvest and then Shavuos, finally the wheat harvest, the two loaves of wheat bread, you offer seven lambs and one bullock and two rams are all olas, and then you have two lambs that are for shlamim, right? So we Beit Shammai says that the accompanying karbanot of Shtei Alechem on Shavuot informs us about which one's more important. So olas, you got 10 olas and 2 shlamim. So whenever you have the chance, ola is more important. Ola should be the one that's more valuable. Okay. So those are the two reasons, right? We have the reason of because it all goes to God, and we have the reason because look to the karbanot associated with Shavuos as the source to teach us which one is more quote unquote important. No, Beit Hillel says that the shlamim should be worth more and is therefore more important. Because chagiga, the shlamim offering, we find in the Torah, and this is going to be a big discussion coming up, we find that the chagiga predates, predates Matan Torah. That they were offering shlamim even before God gave it's original. It's the most authentic. It's OG, right? So because since it comes first, it comes before the Torah even was given. So therefore, it's more important and it should be valued higher. Mashen came beriyah, right? The ola riyah only is established after Matan Torah. So that's one reason. Va'on matzino b'nesiyim. We also and his model is not Shavuos Karbanos, like Beit Shammai, but is rather the Nesiyim, what we're reading now. I always love how, like, randomly, we're learning Daf HaShavua, and we're going to talk a little bit about the laning that we just did 20 minutes ago. It's nice like that, the interconnectedness of all everything we do. Right? Shariba Be'enakatu B'Shlamim, Yotcha Mibolot. Right? When it comes to the Karbanot that the Nesiyim would offer during the dedication of the Mizbeach, there are many more Shlamim offered than there are Olot. Beit Hillel, so now we're going to go back and forth, right? So keep it straight in your head, right? Again, Beit Shammai, Ola is more important. We learn that from the fact that it all goes to God. And we also learn that from the fact that it's the model is Shavuos. And Beit Hillel says, no, Shlamim is more important because we find it existed even prior to Matan Torah. And the model is the Karbanot that the Nesiyim offer that we read over Hanukkah. Okay, so now we're going to say, Beit Hillel, my time alone, Rikki Beit Shammai. Why does Beit Hillel say what he says and doesn't hold like Beit Shammai? The Ka'amart, right? Because you, Beit Shammai, say, Re'iyah Adifa, De'ola Kula L'Gavoa. Right? So that one is, right? Like, that's not, what's that based on? Is there a pasuk that tells us that a carbon that goes to Hashem should be worth more? No, it's logic. Right? So Beit Hillel says, I reject your logic. I have a different logic. Adarabah, Chagiga Adifa, Dit Be'i Shtei Achilot. Right? No, the shlamim is better because God gets some and we get some. It's not either or, right? It's better the shlamim because God gets some and we get some. Comrade Nilaf Matzeret, right? And the second reason you offer is because we should learn from Shavuos. There's more olas on Shavuos than shlamim. I disagree because you can't learn anything out from Matzeret. Done in Karban Yachid mi Karban Yachid. You should learn a Karban Yachid, namely the value of your Ola Riyah from a Karban Yachid, which we see that Beit Hillel does, the Nesiyim. Those were private, personal Karbanot. V'ein done in Karban Yachid, mi Karban Tzibur. Don't learn the value of the Ola Riyah versus Shalmei Chagiga, which are personal Karbanot, from the national Karbanot that were offered on the holiday of Shavuos. That's Beit Hillel's problem with Beit Shammai. Well, Beit Shammai, my time alone, Rikki Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai, why doesn't he learn like Beit Hillel, right? Remember, Beit Shammai said what? Beit Shammai said that the Ola should be worth more, and he gave two reasons that Beit Hillel just rejected. Now Beit Shammai is going to reject Beit Hillel's reasoning. You said one reason is because that the we see Shlomim existed even prior to Matan Torah. Right? It doesn't. There's no proof, because he's of the opinion, as we'll see as we dissect, that some of the karbanot that were offered prior to Matan Torah were also olas. So there's no definitive proof to Beit Hillel. With the comrade Nelef Minasiyim, and you Beit Hillel want to learn that Shlomim are more important because there are more Shlomim in the prince's offerings. He says, no, I don't want to learn from the Siyim. Done in Davar Noeg Ledorot, Midavar Noeg Ledorot. You should only learn the value of the Ola, Re'iyah, and the Shamei Chagiga from karbanot that are going to be in perpetuity, right? Whether they are private karbanot or their national karbanot, right? But at least they exist forever, so they're there. They can teach us something about the status in all at all times. They ain't done in Divrei Noeg. Right, and Beit Shammai says it's anachronistic. It's incorrect to try to teach us something about our karbanot for every regel from a once in history event that was the dedication of the Mishkan and the karbanot of the Nesiyim. Beit Hillel, Maishna Chagiga, Diyeshna Lifnei Adibor. Right, so we want to know. Where does Beit Hillel see that Shlomim were offered before the before Matan Torah? Dichtiv, right, this is the pasuk. Vayizbechu zvachim Shlomim, right? Because the pasuk says, right? Do we have the full pasuk in the Mikra Kodesh? Maybe Vayishlach et Nare bnei Yisrael. Right, this is that strange thing in Yitro, where the he sent for the youth of the Jewish people, v'yalu olot, they offered olot, v'yizbechu zvachim shlomim l'Hashem parim, and they offered, right, it was right before they were eating right before Matan Torah, but we see v'yizbechu zvachim shlomim, right? So we see Beit Hillel says, you see that even before Matan Torah they were offering shlomim. That's why shlomim are important. So, but you just saw the pasuk, right? The whole pasuk. Right, it's on the left, on the right-hand column. If you have the, maybe in all of them, the Mikra Kodesh, it says it here, right? But the pasuk Riya Nami Dichtiva Yalu Olot, right? So Beit Shammai would say, yeah, but the pasuk also says they offered Olot. So they didn't just offer Shlomim; they also offered Olot. So they also took place before Matan Torah. No, so Kasavri Beit Hillel would say, Ola Shekriv Yisrael Bamidbar, Ola Tamid Havi. Right, so the Ola that's mentioned in this pasuk that they offered in the Midbar, namely before Matan Torah, was a Tamid, right? And therefore, you can't learn anything else. The Tamid has its own status. It's every day, right? You can't learn anything else out. Right? As Rashi says, it's an obligation every day. Therefore, you can't learn anything out. You can't learn about special olas from the carbon tamid. The tamid stands on its own. It's not a model for any other tamid and any other ola, because no other ola is every day. Okay. Beit Shammai savri ola shekriv yisrael b'midbar ola t'riya havi. Beit Shammai says no. The pasuk, there's a question about the pasuk when it talks about offering olas. What kind of ola was it? Beit Shammai says it was an ola t'riya. It was similar to the carbon that every individual offers every regel, and therefore it comes before Matan Torah. And therefore, there's no proof that the shlomim should be is more important and should be worth more than the ola, because both were offered prior to Matan Torah. And Beit Hillel says no, the ola that was offered before Matan Torah was a tamid. Tamid stands alone. You can't learn anything else out from a Tamid, and therefore we have before Matan Torah a carbon Tamid, which you can't learn anything else out from, and Shlomim, and therefore Shlomim are more important. I find myself talking twice as much as last week, because there's, you gotta explain things as opposed to just reading Psukim. Okay, Amar Abaye, Beit Shammai, Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Shmuel. So Abaye is trying to collate some of the information we have. So Beit Shammai, Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Shmuel, Kul Sorelehu, Ola Shekriv Yisrael Bamidbar, Ola Triyahavi. Rabbi Shammai is not alone in saying that this pasuk, which we just read from Parshat Yitro, that olas were offered before Matan Torah, that those olas were olaria, of seeing God's face. Right, it's a little different than normally we right. After this point in history, when we talk about olas ria, it's about when you go to the Makom Mikdash, right? Whether it was in Shiloh or Yerushalayim. Here, where was the olaria offered? What location?
Sinai,
because you were going to see God's, right? It was a special moment in history. Right? Maybe it was Shavuos, maybe it wasn't Shavuos, but it was an olas ria of a unique kind. Nevertheless, we see that they're offered, an olas ria is offered before Matan Torah, and this position of Beit Shammai is shared by Rabbi Elazar and Yishmael. Ubeit Hillel, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Kulus Rilei, Olas Shikrivi Yisrael B'Midbar, Olas Tamid Havi. Right? So we line it up. It's not just Beit Hillel, but it's also Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Yossi Aglili, who hold that the Karban Ola referred to in that Pasuk in Yisro is a reference to Karban and Ola Tamid, Karban Tamid, and does not in any way teach us anything about Olat Riyah, and therefore Shlamim are more valuable.
The two sides are arguing that which one is it more like? Right, I mean, it's not really an olas ria because you don't that institution doesn't exist.
I think what they're saying.
It's not really a tamid because that doesn't exist.
No. If you see Rashi, second class Rashi, olas ria havi. What does it mean that they hold that this was an olas ria? Al shem vayachzu et elokim. The pasuk continues and says they saw God. So it's a ria, and it's a literal ria, even though it's not the type. Ria, right? The type Ria is when you go Ola Rego. This was seeing God offering an Ola Ria. So it may be a precursor, but more importantly, it's a precursor that could teach us something about Olas Ria throughout history, and it's more importantly, it's not a carbon tumid. I think that's the point. So now we're going back, right? Abaye makes this bold statement of dividing up the Shitas, right? Beit Shammai, Reb Lezer, and Rabbi Shmuel are all holding that the Ola brought was an Olas Ria. Beit Shammai Hadamaran. Beit Shammai we saw, look earlier on the page. I'm not going to go through it again. Rabbi Shmuel, Titania, Rabbi Shmuel. So we have a Braita that Rabbi Shmuel says, last line on Vavam and Aleph, Klalot Namru B'Sinai, Upratot Bo'amoid. Right? Because Rabbi Shmuel is of the opinion that, there's a whole question, what do we get at Sinai? Every single word of the Torah, Ten Commandments. It's an interesting sheer topic. So Rabbi Shmuel, in broad strokes, says the general rules, what we would call the klalot, were given at Sinai, and the details had to be taught to Hashem, to Moshe by Hashem at the Ol Moed, right? Once the Mishkan was established, and Hashem began speaking to Moshe from the Parochet by the Kodesh HaKadosh. Okay. So therefore, right, Beit Shammai is saying that it can't be the Karban Tamid because the Karban Tamid had not yet been commanded. I think that's the relationship between Rabbi Shmuel's opinion. But let's see in a moment. Rabbi Kiva Omer Klalot Upratot Nam Rabbi Sinai. Right? That Rabbi Kiva says, no, all the general principles and the particulars were all given at Sinai. V'nishnu bo al moed. And they were repeated at the Ol Moed, right, once the Mishkan was established, v'nishtalshu barvot boav, and were repeated again right before Moshe died, right, three times. V'yisak adaitach. Okay, so now we're going to explain how this relates to our discussion about the Ola that was offered at Har Sinai. V'yisak adaitach Ola shekriv yisrael b'midbar Ola tamid havi, right, if you would hold that the Ola that was brought at Har Sinai prior to Matan Torah was the Tamid. Right? So there's a technical issue, because then it would have been offered in different ways before and after Sinai. Right? Because the Karban Tamid, the details of the Karban Tamid would not have been given until after Matan Torah. So if you say that the Ola that was brought before Matan Torah was a Tamid, then what you're saying is that the Tamid was offered one way, and then the Torah was given, and the Tamid, specifically in terms of Hafshet V'Nituach, right, which is the skinning and the dismembering of the animal prior to offering it on the Mizbeach, had to have been taught later on. So, and that we don't want to say, there's an inconsistency in the way the Tamid was brought. Right? As opposed to if you say that it was an Olat Riya, so the Riya doesn't have these particular obligations. Right? They don't have these particular obligations of Hefshet and Nituach. So therefore there'd be no change from between before Matan Torah and after Matan Torah. Right? So if you say that it's the Karban Tamid, you set up a situation based on Rabbi Shmuel. Right? Because Rabbi Shmuel says that they didn't learn the details until months later when the Olam Moed was set up. So you create a situation where the Tamid would have been offered in different ways. That's impossible. So it must be, right? It's a lot of logic, but it must be that Rabbi Shmuel holds that Karban Ola prior to Matan Torah was an Olas Riya. And the Bnei Yisrael only started offering the Karban Tamid when they had a Mishkan, right? When they were able to offer it the same way they were offering it for the rest of history. When there was Karbanos offered. So that's how we prove Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shmuel, holds that the Ola before Matan Torah was in fact an Ola Suriyah. Okay. Where are we? And we want to know about the last one. Rabbi Lezer, right? Because again, Abaye said, Beit Shammai, Rabbi Lezer, and Rabbi Shmuel all hold that the Ola that the Bnei Yisrael offered before Matan Torah was an Ola Suriya. Beit Shammai we saw, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shmuel we just did, and now Rabbi Lazar. Rabbi Lazar, right, 2, 4, 6 lines from the top, Rabbi Lazar, Detanya, Olat Tamid, Hasuya, Bahar Sinai. Right, there's a pasuk in Pinchas, and we read it every Rosh Chodesh, that the Olat Tamid that was performed, that was created, that was made on Har Sinai. Rabbi Lazar Omer Maaseha, Nemru b'Sinai, v'hi atzma lo karva. Right, Rabbi Lazar holds that how to do it, the how to, was taught at Sinai, but it wasn't offered until later on. Right, it was not offered until later on. And Rabbi Kiva Omer, karva v'shuv lo pascha. Right, Rabbi Kiva says no, it was offered on Har Sinai. Namely, right, even before Matan Torah, and then it would not be stopped. And then from that point forward, they would continue to offer the Karban Tamid. Right? And that fits, because Rabbi Kiva was one of them that Abaye holds as like Beit Hillel. Right? So here, this Machloket, Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Kiva, this Pasuk, which says, Olat Tamid Hasuya Bahar Sinai. That's a strange word, Hasuya. What does it mean it was made on Har Sinai? Does that mean that they started doing it on Har Sinai? That's the opinion of that's the opinion of Beit Hillel. That's the opinion of Rabbi Kiva, we're going to see. And Rabbi Lazar says, no. They learned about it, but they didn't do it until later on. That's the opinion of Beit Shammai. Right? And again, what does this have to do with us? Because if you hold that the Ola before Matan Torah was an Ola's Tamid, then it's not. Then you have no proof that the Ola's Riya should be more valuable and more important than the Shalmei Chagiga. Rabbi Kiva Omer Chorav Eshel Paska. Elamani Mikayim. So we want to know, what do you do with this Pasuk in Amos? What does... if you hold that they did in fact offer the Karban Tamid, I think this might be a question according to both, Mani Mikayim, because both of them hold that at some point in the Midbar, they offered the Karban Tamid. There's just a question of, did it start at Har Sinai, or did it not start until the Mishkan was established a few months later? So what do you do with the Pasuk in Amos? The Pasuk in Amos says, Hazvachim u'mincha higashtem li b'midbar b'im shana. Beit Yisrael, did you Jews bring me an offering, a mincha offering to me in the wilderness for 40 years? The implication of that, it's a Lashon Tema, as Rashi says. And the implication is that they didn't offer this Karban based on Gemara Yevamot. They didn't offer the Tamid for 40 years. So what does it mean that, I think one could definitely ask the question according to both opinions. How do you understand the Pasuk in Amos that says that there was no Karban Tamid offered during the entire duration of the Jews' time in the wilderness? So there's a answer to this. Shifto shel Levi shelovdu avodah zarah heini kruvo ota. Right, so no, the only ones that were allowed to offer the the Karban Tamid was the Shevet of Levi. They didn't serve any Avodah Zarah. They were allowed to offer it. And so what we say is, and as Rashi points out, Hikruvu Mishalahem, they offered a Karban Tamid, but it wasn't the Karban Tamid that we know of as a national offering. It was a Karban Tamid that was offered as sort of a private daily offering on behalf of the Levium. So it's not the same Karban Tamid that we know of. So that's how we understand the Pasuk in Amos. When God says, "He didn't offer me a Karban Tamid," it means He didn't offer me a real Tamid that was a Karban Tzibor that was brought from public funds that represented all of Klal Yisrael. No! There was a Tamid, but it was a Tamid that was viewed as exclusively from the Levium. So that we have. So those are all the opinions. Beit Shammai, Rabbi Shmuel, and Rabbi Lazar, who all hold that the Ola that was brought in the Midbar was in fact an Ola Sriya, and the Ola Sriya all the time, forevermore, it should be more valuable, more expensive than the Shalmei Chagiga. Now we're going to line up the other opinions. Beit Hillel, Hadamran. Right, Beit Hillel, we saw. Rabbi Kiva, Nami Damran. We saw that Rabbi Kiva also. Right in the Machloket, Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Lazar, right above, about Hasuya Bahar Sinai. Rabbi Kiva says that once the Karban Tamid was offered, it would continue to be offered forevermore. And Rabbi Yosef Glili, where do we see that Rabbi Yosef Glili holds that the Karban Tamid was offered at Har Sinai? The Tanya, Rabbi Yosef Glili Omer, Shalosh Mitzvot, Nitztavu Yisrael Balotam LaRegel. Right, there were three mitzvot that the Jews are commanded when they go up to Regel. Ria, V'chagigia, V'simcha. Those are the three, in general. Right, when you go all the Regel, three special mitzvot, right? Every holiday may have its unique mitzvot, right? Like Shtei Alechem on Shavuos and Matzah on Pesach and Sukkah and Lulav and Esrog on Sukkot. But what unites them all are these three mitzvot. Ria, right, going up to the Temple Mount. We've been talking about who's excluded from that. Chagiga, right, offering the Shalmei Chagiga, the Shlamim. And Simcha, the mitzvah of a Samachta B'chagecha. So Yesh Biriya Shem B'shteyam, Yesh B'chagiga Shem B'shteyam, Yesh B'simcha Shem B'shteyam. Each of these three mitzvot are unique in a certain way that is unlike the other two. Yesh Biriya Shem B'shteyam, what's unique about the carbon Riyah, the Ola Riyah that you bring when you go up to the Temple Mount? Shem B'shteyam, Sharia Ola, Kula Gva, Mashen Ge B'shteyam. Right? There is also Shame Simcha. Right? Over the course of Yantav, you eat a lot of meat. So all the meat that you would eat over Yontif would be shlamim. Right? There was the Shalmei Chagiga, which you had to bring, and then there would be the Shalmei Simcha, which would, depending on a person's stature, depending on how many people they were having over, etc., was somewhat subjective. These are all, we're talking about really all the karbanot in these three, actually. So what's unique about the Riyah? The unique Riyah is that it's an Ola. The Chagiga and the Simcha are both Shlamim. Yesh b'Chagiga, what's unique about the Shalmei Chagiga? Right, the Chagiga was offered even before Matan Torah, which is not the case by the Ola and by the Ola Sriya and the Shalmei Simcha. Yesh b'Simcha, what's unique about the Simcha or the Karban Simcha, unlike the other two, Shasimcha noeget b'anashim uvanashim, because Simcha, right, whether the Karban or the rejoicing on the festival, is relevant for both men and women, which is not the case by Shalmei Chagiga, nor by Ola Sriya. Right, so what do we see from here? Rabbi Yosef Glili says, right, that the Chagiga is the one that was offered before Matan Torah, and therefore that's like Beis Hillel. That's the same opinion. Therefore the Chagiga has to be worth more than the Ola. Rabbi Shmuel, my time of Kamuk with like Kibbeh Shammai. Why does Rabbi Shmuel establish himself like Beit Shammai? Namely, that the Ola Sriya has to be worth more because the carbon brought before Matan Torah was an Ola Sriya. Isal Kadaitach Ola Shekriva Yisrael Bamidbar Olas Tamid Havi. If you hold that the Ola that was brought in the Midbar before Matan Torah was an Olas Tamid. Mikam. Right? That was the reason why he held what he held. That if you held that the Karban Ola was a Tamid, then you have a situation where the Tamid changed after a few months. And we don't like that. But we say, Rabbi Yosef Glili, Damar Ola Shekriva Yisrael Midbar Ola's Tamid Avi. Mekar lo bai hashem rituach, obasov bai hashem rituach. Right? Rabbi Yosef Glili didn't have that problem. He said it changed. It was always a Karban Tamid. even before Matan Torah. And before Matan Torah, it was offered without Hefshed and Nituach. After they were given all the details at the Ol Moed, they would offer the carbon, continue to offer the carbon tamid, this time slightly differently, with Hefshed and Nituach. The Tanya of Yosef Glila Omer, Ola Shekriv Yisrael B'Midbar, Ein Atuna Hefshed and Nituach, V'shein Shem V'Neshuach Al Ol Moed V'Leilach. Right, so it's not unheard of, it's not impossible to suggest that the carbon tamid was offered before Matan Torah and then continued to be offered, but with update, with changes due to what was taught at the Ol Moed. So at the Ol Moed, they were taught that the tamid has to be skinned and dismembered before it's brought on the Mizbeach, but it's still a continuation of the carbon tamid. So there's no proof positive that Rabbi Shmuel held, even if Rabbi Shmuel held, that only the details weren't given until, because Rabbi Shmuel, just all we know about Rabbi Shmuel is he held that the generalities were given at Sinai and the details were given at the Ol Moed. Our inference from that was that if you didn't know the details, you're going to set up a situation whereby the carbon tamid would have had to change its form from when you offered it before Matan Torah to when you offered it in the Ol Moed. We said that that's inconceivable. What we just proved is that that's not inconceivable. That's the position of Rav Yossi Aglili. Someone actually holds that. Someone holds that the carbon tamid began prior to Matan Torah. It was continued to be offered all the way through, and it went through this dramatic change after Hashem taught all the details at Matan at the Ol Moed. So there's no proof positive. That inference is incorrect. So we say Sami Mikan Rabbi Shmuel. So take out Rabbi Shmuel from that list. If the only way we know Rabbi Shmuel is supposed to hold, like Beit Shammai, is based on this inference about the details being given at the Ol Moed, that is not proof positive that the Karban Tamid only began at the Ol Moed. The Karban Tamid could have begun earlier and gone through this dramatic change and yet still been called a Karban Tamid. Okay, one last piece by Rav Chista. Okay, it's a new piece, so we can sort of clear our brains for a second. By Rav Chista. That's a lot. Right? Yeah. Very different than the previous Amud, right? Very different than the previous blood. By Rav Chista. Haikra hechik tiv, vayishlach et nari b'nei Yisrael, vayalu olot kvasim, vayizmich uzvachim shlamim l'ashem parim. Right, remember, the Pasuk, you have to look at the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, for our purposes, is that vayalu olot, they offered, right, olot, which are completely burnt, we understand, vayizmich uzvachim shlamim l'ashem, and then they offered shlamim parim. Right, so the question is, what does parim go on? Right, does parim go on the olot and the shlamim, or does parim only go on the end of the pasuk, namely the shlamim, and olot were offered of kvasim, of rams, even though it's not said in the pasuk? Right, understand, the word kvasim is not in the pasuk. We are injecting that word to try to understand the specifics of what did they offer in that moment when the lads, the youth, brought these karbanot before Matan Torah. So Rav Chista asks, Vishlach et Nari b'nei Yisrael v'yalu olot, when it says that they offered offerings, was that kvasim? And v'yizmich uzvachim shlamim l'Hashem is in fact parim only. Parim only applies to the shlamim. Odil ma'adi v'adi parim. But really, both of them are parim. From the pasuk itself, there's only one time that it says parim at the end. Does that go on the last clause, or does that go on both clauses? Namely, not only shlamim, but also olot. So we want to know, why Yahakim Yachinik, right? Lamai Nafkamina, right? So who cares? What difference does it make? So Marzutra Amar Lepisuk Tamim. Very simply, for the trup, or what we might call punctuation, right? Right? Is there a, right? Where's the Etnachta? Right? The Etnachta is like a period, is like a semicolon in the middle of the Pasuk, right? So if the Olot were offered from something other than Parim, then you should have a full stop after the words Olot. Because they offered one thing for Olot, and the Zvachim Shlamim, they offered Parim. Right? So the Trup should reflect that. That's what Rashi mentions in there. Trup is punctuation, so the punctuation should indicate that. Rav Acha Bei D'Rava Amar Le'Omer Hari Alai Ola Kola She'Kriva Yisrael B'Midbar. My Parim Havu Kvasim Havu. Right? What if a person says, I accept upon myself to bring an ola, like that ola that was offered by those lads on Har Sinai before Matan Torah? Right? That's always the go, by the way, throughout Shas, that's the go-to nafkamina. right? Like, what difference does it make if something's brown or black? Well, it makes a difference because if you say I'm taking a shvuah to bring a karban the color of that which was there, right? So we have to know, was it black or blue or brown? So oftentimes this is the greatest common denominator, but the least persuasive nafkamina you'll find. I'm going to take a shvuah that I'm going to bring an ola like the ola that was brought at Har Sinai. So do I have to bring a kvasim? Do I have to bring rams? Or do I have to bring parim? Do I have to bring bullocks? Depends on how you read the pasuk. So the answer is teku, leave me alone. No, teku is let it stay. Right? Let it teku, that it's unresolved. Right here, I feel like teku here really means like leave me alone. Right? Like don't bother me with this nafkamina. And we can look at the pasuk inside to see exactly how we read it, and which reading is reflected in the pasuk as we have.